Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey friends, have you noticed that no matter how much yoga we do, we may still struggle in our intimate relationships? My husband and I have a great relationship, but we are not relationship coaches. And we know that yoga can and does help, but at a certain point, you need more relational support from a relationship specialist. If you're going through some kind of challenge right now in your relationships, my friend Jason Gaddis at the Relationship School can help. Jason's team will pair you up with a skilled relationship coach, and within 48 hours, you'll be getting private one-on-one support on whatever you're going through relationally. And right now, for my listeners only, Jason is offering half off 1 month of relationship coaching. Head over to relationshipschool.com/Laura to get the deal and watch your relationships improve. Good movement, and welcome to Redefining Yoga, a lit yoga podcast, which is designed to investigate all aspects of the modern evolution of yoga from my background as a physical therapist and lover of movement. My mission is to help everyone find freedom through smarter and safer movement patterns, so together we can be uplifted, benefiting all beings. Welcome to Friday with Friends. I'm excited to have Mara Branscum on with me. She is a mother, writer, yogi, artist, teacher, mindfulness leader, ceremonialist, and spiritual coach. She's the author of Ritual as Remedy, Embodied Practices for Soul Care. So you can imagine we had a very soulful talk. We talked about her background, how she spent a year in India, what led her to becoming someone who practices rituals, teaches the art of rituals, and created this book for anyone. We also talked about why rituals are important, how they can be healing and empowering and really help you get to know yourself better. Please enjoy my heart-filled conversation with Mara. Welcome, Mara. I'm so happy to have you on today. And before we dive into all the things ritual, I would love to hear about your background, how you got to where you are today.
Thank you for having me. That's a big question.
I know. That could probably be the entire podcast.
How I got here. You know, I feel like I followed the trail of my passions and what lit me up in always bending the traditional route. I came from a, you know, middle-class conservative family. I was blessed to be the fourth child, so I feel like I always got to choose the different way. I really think some of the pivotal things that happened to me, one, I started practicing yoga at a young age and found myself in India for a year, right out of college. And from there, I continued to follow all mind, body, somatic work, weaving in the artistry of dance as well, which landed me all the while. Ritual was a huge part of my, you know, my love. And again, I was blessed at a young age, at 16, to go to my first fire ceremony that I think changed my life. So all of these threads are woven into what is now the work, which is ritual and somatic mind-body work and, you know, leaning into all of that.
What part of your background do you think kind of set the stage for this? Because I feel like everyone who goes on the path and eventually not even just your life, but your profession is wrapped in this inquiry, spiritual inquiry, life inquiry. Mm-hmm. I feel like there's usually some seeds from your background, whether it was a reaction against or a following of a taste of it. Was there anything in your background that sparked this?
I believe that there's two things, and I'm just coming to this right now as we're speaking. So thank you for that. I was a gymnast growing up. In fact, I was, you know, competitive 30 hours a week, trained my, you know, poured my childhood into this. And that was by choice. And it was always that it was just such a love for me. And I loved to fly, tumbling, dance, you know, all of that. And so what that was discipline. It was like a deep, deep discipline, a deep practice. And it had rhythm to it. And then paired with my love of nature, and I was gifted to have every summer of my whole life until I, you know, left the house to be at our summer cabin. So I feel like nature and discipline, if that makes any sense,
totally.
Like this, yeah, this framework to then be free inside it.
Yes, I often talk about discipline being a really good word that we need to embrace more, because we need structure. The structure is actually what gives us space to be creative, to enjoy the elements in the world around us. Otherwise, it could just be, you know, minor chaos at best, or really major at worst. And I think that it makes sense that your background of, 30 hours a week, that's a lot. Anyone I know for dance and for gymnastics in those early years, creating that wiring, that habit of coming back and practicing. And a lot of that practice is repetitive. You know, it's not like novel every time. And there is a discipline in doing it because it becomes ingrained and it strengthens and fortifies your body, your movement patterns, and ultimately, obviously, many other things. Yeah. So did you start after your trip to India? Did you start teaching yoga when you came back to the States or came back to Canada?
Yes. Yeah. You know what? I'm also a school teacher. So I had a degree in education as well. So I come from a long line of teachers, in fact, and I did teach school, Waldorf school, which is, I'm a Waldorf teacher. So I did that training formally. So you know what? Yoga was quite a private practice to me. So it was very sacred. It was something I did alone. It was something that I did every day, and that I found right after I retired essentially from gymnastics, I found Iyengar's Light on Yoga book in the university library when I was studying Eastern philosophy and I was 17 years old. And so that I did eventually start teaching yoga, you know, shortly after I came home from India, but it was never my number one. It was this discipline, this form, this practice that there was so much freedom and familiarity. Somehow there was a familiar energy that made me feel very at home.
So how did you transition from that experience, or what part of India were the seeds for this idea of a ritual and the ceremony that is involved in rituals?
Mm-hmm. So I was blessed to be a part of this group called Sisters of the Shields. And it was around the same time, actually, it was before even I went to India. So I had been studying the pagan Celtic Wheel of the Year. So my ancestors are from Ireland, Scotland, and England. And so I found great resonance. And again, I stumbled upon this group, and they welcomed me in, and I had many elders that were mailing me in the mail, because this was pre-internet. So I would get in the mail these envelopes of like the full moon ceremony to do that month based on the stars, the astrology, and based on the seasons. And so those were very formative and generative years for me as a young woman. And from that, I felt like I was gifted the permission to keep going, to keep finding the trainings that then there could be a resonance that then I could offer it to the world. So I feel that's what's happened, is, you know, these traditions have come in, and I've experienced them for the past 25 years, I would say, which has really culminated in the book, in what's in the book.
Yeah. So before we launch into the book, explain to me and the listeners, like, I mean, I think we all intuitively know some of this, but what are the benefits of having rituals, having like an understanding of the cycle of the year, understanding of the cycle of the moon? Mm-hmm. What are the benefits of those?
Great question. And, you know, for me, the benefits are, it's rhythm. it's real. It's in the, you know, every 29 and a half days, we have the new moon. You know, we have an opportunity to align with the new moon, which represents new beginnings. 12 days later, full moon, which represents that kind of big expansive energy out into the world. And how do we organize ourselves when there's expansive energy? And so for me, it's about that contraction, that drawing in, and that expansion that we see in nature every step of the way. And so the benefits, you know, a ritual for me is anything done with intention. It's making our habits holy. It's making our habits conscious, especially the habits that we know are generative, you know, positive and life-giving to us. When we become conscious of them, suddenly the, you know, the voices that I'm not good enough, I'm not this, all that stuff, they'll still be there, as we know, through the meditative practice, but they don't become the biggest voice in the room. We get to tune in perhaps and feel safe, feel calm, feel connected, feel grounded. I feel those are some of the benefits.
I love that. And I'm sure this is in the book, but can you give us an idea, like what are some of the rituals that you implement for your own personal experiences and that you probably also share in the book?
So I like to think about bookending my days with ritual, or you can call it habit, you can call it an active intention. So we really have to find the words that work for us. And I want this work to be accessible to everyone in the world, no matter what your lineage, what your background, what your knowledge is. So for me, I wake up in the morning, my practice is to light a candle. That works for me. I don't go to my phone right away. I don't turn on lights. So I'm working with the natural light, lighting the candle. I sit with the candle and I call forward my gratitudes. I go one step further. I visualize my day going the way that I want it to go. And then I ask this question of myself, what am I opening to today? That there is 2 minutes. That is accessible to all of us. We are all so busy, but we can create that. That may lead into a breath work for me, for example, into a yoga practice, not always, but the lighting of the candles, the gratitudes, and the what am I evolving or what am I opening to today seem to really support me.
And I'm just curious, like what would an answer to that be? Like what you're evolving or opening to today?
Yeah.
What would be an example of that?
Great question. And I love this because this is us working with spontaneity again. Mm-hmm. So I'm not looking to like, what do I want to be? So this morning, you know, what came forward is I'm going to roll with the waves. I'm going to roll with the tides, you know, of life. Life is big. Life is complex. We have all these deadlines and busy. And, you know, that was really helpful information for me to receive this morning. So it allowed my nervous system to go, yeah, you've got deadlines, but you got this because you're going to roll with the waves. And we always know energy moves out, energy moves back in. And when we understand that and trust it, perhaps life will be less dramatic and less intense.
Mm-hmm. And probably less reactive.
Yes.
And I imagine that doing this in the morning is not only helpful, it's setting the stage for the day, mm-hmm. but that there's a freshness to it. So what people might not realize, if they're very in their head, so to speak, and that mm-hmm. question comes up and they start to like overanalyze it, there's in the morning, there's this renewal that's already present, whether we have gotten away from it or not, but there is this inner listening that can happen that might get cluttered if we try to do it later in the day. But mm-hmm. if we start off fresher, I think it sounds like what you're saying is you tune in to kind of your own compass, what your mm-hmm. needs are, what you want, and without this attachment to whether you get it or not, but you've at least set that intention, and that sounds beautiful. And have you found that to be true, whether or not it goes the way you want it to be?
Exactly, because you're dialing into a frequency of perhaps positivity, good energy. You know, instead of saying, I have to do this, how am I going to do this? I'll never be able to manage. That's a tricky transition. Not sure if I'm going to make it. I just go with this fluid energy. And sometimes I know when there's tricky parts in the day, and I do my morning visualization, I visualize them with a bit of light around them. We all have to find our own way. But for me, the imagination, the power of visualization is really key here. And the point that you made about releasing the outcome is really, really important in all of this work. because sometimes the universe wants to bring us just a little different, you know, path, little journey to get there. And when we stay open to that, we actually have a greater chance of receiving what is meant for us.
Mm, I love that. Now, you're also a mother. How do you feel like this ritual practices that you implement, these ritual practices, help your mothering?
Mm-hmm. It's a great question. It's been profound for me. Profound in that it's become an anchor, and it always has been. And my daughters, I have two daughters, 8 and 11, and you know, they've been with me the whole journey with the ritual. I never make it separate. I never make it like, oh, mama has to go do this. And it's like, it's always an open invitation, you know? So they see me doing it. They sometimes participate, sometimes not. They choose. At dinner, again, I light a candle, no matter how rushed it is, just to anchor us, have a centerpiece on our kitchen table that reflects the seasons. So they build that usually, and they're part of that. Again, bringing beauty, bringing joy into the home. And in the evening, you know, they're like, oh, mama, can you put lavender oil on our feet again? And so that becomes, you know, there's evening rituals that we do just to bring the calming lavender oil, the plants, you know, calming chamomile tea. And so this is been a huge part of both, you know, my life and my daughter's life as well.
And I love how you're saying that ritual can mean different things. It can mean a habit, because sometimes habits we think of as not necessarily great things because they are in a way defined by the fact that you do them almost automatically without a conscious nature. And this is more of a bit of a habit that has a consciousness to it. I'm assuming that your kids are about to enter some more challenging years. Challenging, not in a negative way. We've all been through it. Mm-hmm. But those are really formative years where they're starting to expand themselves, have doubt, have influence from, you know, outside culture. Has that started to emerge at all in with the older daughter in particular, and how have these rituals kind of grounded her or brought her or reminded her of who she is and her power?
Yeah, that's a great question, because in fact we did a ritual last night, and it was the Lionsgate portal last night. So it's, you know, the eighth month of the eighth year every year, which is a powerful time to drop in and, you know, actually journal about what you want in your life and how, you know, how you want that, what do you want to manifest? And so, you know, my 11-year-old is going into grade six, and she, her friend group, many of her friends have gone to different schools this year. So she's going on her own. So she's had a lot of fear and some anxiety around this. So we dropped in last night and we journaled about, okay, well, what do you want to create this year? How do you want to feel? Even though it's going to be hard going, you know, for your first year alone, how do you want to feel? She said, I want to be brave and I want to feel good. Well, those two things, so simple, right? And yes, she got it on paper. And that right there is a nugget that may really support her.
And oh, she absolutely
knows. And she knows that we got her, you know.
I was going to say, and the anchor of having such a nurturing and loving and open home life is so immensely helpful. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about your book. Many people think about writing a book if they've had something very, very meaningful in their life that they want to share. What was the inspiration for writing the book, and how did you craft it out? I'm sure there's a discipline in that, in making it something for, it sounds like, the general public.
Mm-hmm. So this was a course, Ritual as Remedy. It was called The Art of Ritual, and I wrote it as an online course that I offered for 5 years prior to writing this book. So I had the bones of the book. However, when I was teaching the online course, I did not think about that I was going to write a book. And then one day, as I was flipping through the PDFs, because I was reorganizing the online course, and I just looked at the PDF and I said, oh, this could be a book. And it literally flew out of my mouth. And then I had a flash of me holding a book. My book looked different than this cover, against my bookshelf right there. And I was holding it. And I thought, and it came so strong, like a flash of lightning. right down my spine. And I thought, uh-oh, I have to write a book now. So that's how it was. And the discipline was that my morning ritual became writing very early, 5 a.m., 4:30 sometimes. And because that was my time, you know, to be quiet and really connected, not distracted by any sounds or my children. And that's how it went. And I organized it based on the elements. And based on the Celtic wheel of the year, and my intention. And when I got that flash of insight, and I mean, that doesn't come very often. I'm not saying I have these all the time. This was just a really clear message that it was time that I received it. And the other voice that came afterwards was, it's for the collective. So the process and the discipline was waking up every single morning and touching the book and getting into it. Like, no matter what I could do, if it wasn't that much, I still had to land every single day inside the work. The second part was I had to get over my own ego constantly and say, let it go. This is for the collective. This is not about you. This is not about you. This is for the collective. So that really supported me.
What was the not about you that was a challenge in terms of the ego, as you're mentioning?
Mm-hmm. Well, self-doubt, writing this and going, you know, who's going to actually benefit from this? And is this really what I should be doing? And, you know, all this writing is so hard.
It's very hard.
And I love it too. So it's hard and I love it. So it has this double relationship, which is wonderful because it gives the opposition, gives the strength, right? And so, yeah, that was, and I have a great writing coach. And so that was a wonderful piece where I was being supported and working with someone on this, which was profound. And, you know, really, I learned so much in this process.
I bet in that teaching and learning, that is just so cyclical. You know, one feeds the other. When you learn something and then the ability to speak it, to teach it, makes it that much stronger in your own wiring and understanding. So can you tell us a little bit about the Celtic wheel? I'm very fascinated by that.
Yes. So the Celtic wheel, it begins in the east. So think of a compass, north, south, east, west. Okay. So we start in the corner of the east, which is spring, because spring is kind of like a little bit like that new beginning, that new year. So it generally starts there. And that's the element of air. So it's also spring equinox. So there's all sorts of beautiful symbolism inside that. And it also connects to the heart center and lungs, air, the air we breathe. So, and then we move from the east down to the south. That's the element of fire. We celebrate summer solstice there. And fire is about transformation, reclaiming your inner child, shedding, you know, old self, letting old things die out of you that no longer serve you. And then we move over to the west, and that's the element of water. That's where we celebrate fall equinox. And it's about reclaiming creativity and working with flow and going into a state that is less rigid. And we work to the north. That's the element of earth, winter solstice. It's a lot about reclaiming and understanding your own lineage, so your ancestral lineage, perhaps your spiritual lineage, and working with Mother Earth really as, you know, that original ancestor of ours. And then in the center of the wheel, we go into the realm of ether. So that's how the book is structured also. Mm-hmm.
So when you talk about understanding our ancestors, in what are the questions that you would ask? I mean, like, how important is it to have had, say, a religious background, or for those who had kind of no formal type of spiritual practice that they can summon in their background? Like, how does one bring that into this winter action of ritual?
Mm-hmm. So, in terms of ancestry, I think it's really important for all of us to know and track. And maybe some of us can't because, you know, we've been adopted and we're not sure of that. So, you know, there's many different scenarios here. If you have an opportunity to track your own, you know, lineage, your ancestral lineage, and study that just a little bit, you can kind of get into you know, what were your ancestors up to? What was their craft? What lit them up? What made them, you know, what goodwill acts did they do? And, you know, that's also where we can get into some healing, because also if there's some forgiveness that needs to happen, if there's some, you know, ancestral trauma, pain that needs to be worked with, is very supportive for us as individuals to then go to align with then who we want to be in this lifetime. What kind of ancestor do we want to be? And how do we want to pay? How can we bring the gold of our ancestry forward? And how can we release the stuff that is not serving this contemporary world? And so with that, you know, and, you know, winter also draws us in, winter solstice draws us more into an inward state where we kind of recalibrate. And I think that in a very busy, complex world, we're often out in the world and we're trying to be and do, driving us in the will, almost that colonial, you know, or that manifest destiny to like produce more, create more, do more, be the best, do the best. We can start to untangle from that and really get to the heart of like, what's true for us? What, you know, what do we want to be in service to right now? And how can we be that? So I'm not sure if I really answered your question there.
Yes.
But
yeah. Yes. Well, along those lines, if someone was feeling unmoored or something and their like big question is, how do I find my purpose?
Yes.
How do these ritual practices help someone find their purpose?
That's a great question. So because if you're doing a ritual rhythmically, let's say you're lighting a candle every morning and everyone, you can try it for the next seven days, try something for 7 days straight at the same time of day, see what happens. When you call forward your intention of, you know, showing up in your own authenticity, your own truth, you're more likely to get connected to that purpose, because the other stuff of like, what should I be? What should I do? Which is confusing because there's so many choices in this world today. Then perhaps they start to take a little bit of the backdrop and you start to connect to the center of your body, which is the center of the show. Not the center of the mind necessarily. So I always love to remind people and myself on a daily basis to put your consciousness into your guts, to put your consciousness into the center of your body and check out your purpose there. And, you know, if that word purpose doesn't work for you, check out what's the center of your compass? What's the center of the flower inside your body? And can you feed her or him or they with the most deep respect, the most deep self-love, the showing up on a daily basis, even when life is hard, that you're showing up for yourself in some way. And whether that be that you're drinking 8 glasses of water, or you manage to take your probiotic that day, or you manage to call your friend that you haven't called in a long time, that's showing up.
Mm. Since you mentioned friend, I'm curious, this always is interesting when somebody chooses a path that has such a rich understanding and devotion to it, such as your ritual practices. Have you found that this has ever been challenging in your friend or family groups?
That's a great question. It's taken a long time, for example, for my family, to understand what I've been up to all these years, and they do now, and it's so amazing, and they've been very supportive. So my parents went, you know, from really wanting me to take a traditional path of teaching, being a school teacher or a college professor, to then really, you know, because I kept at it, I kept at it, I didn't back down. And now they're the ones I send my manuscript to first, you know? So it's like so beautiful, because we have to stick with it and we just have to keep believing. If that's what's true for us, people who are ready to show up and support will. Now with the friend and family group in general, that's a great question, because I think sometimes when we do the work of spirit, it can feel quite isolating. A lot of this work I'm doing alone at times. And that's why I love sharing it too, because I feel like then we're gathering the energy and we're changing lives together. And so in a way, what I've found how I move that feeling of, you know, loneliness or isolation, or like, is that I bring nature in as my allies and my collaborators. So for example, I have a tree that I visit every day. I have a puppy that's 1 year old now. And so I'm on this walk with her every day. And then we go to the special tree every day. I call it the mother tree. And she's massive maple, like she's huge. And I just wrap my arms around her and my dog starts wagging her tail and doing the happy dance because we're at the tree again. And that also that question of what am I opening to or what am I evolving into today? I ask that again at the tree, or I look up at her and I say, okay, you know, how can I support you? Or, you know, how can you support me? So I just open to receive that. And then every single time I feel like I'm self-regulating with the tree, like my nervous system is receiving. And I think that goes a long way.
I love that. And I think that as women in particular, I think this is important to hear, because men seem to, they don't seem to have the same pressures or just, I guess, cultural ideas, constructs of friend groups, you know. Mm-hmm. Men can be solo and it's, but sometimes starting from grade school, you know, girls, there's just a little bit more of that need for a circle. And it isn't to say you shouldn't have that circle, but I love that you said, open up the idea of support to other elements, to yourself, because if you could be your own friend, you at the end of the day, that's really what we need. You know, outside of our family, outside of our friends, outside of our possessions, if we can sit with ourselves and really, really be proud of who we are, I think that's much more powerful than having, a Rolodex of friends. Mm-hmm. But having nature as an ally, I love that, because I feel so similar. I feel like I'm fortunate enough to live next to 500 acres of, and I take my puppy and there's nothing quite like it that calms me down and centers me and makes me feel both gratitude and also humility, because at the end of the day, we're really just little specks on this world. And I think that's important to remember. Like, we can contribute a lot, but we also can't take ourselves too seriously.
Yes. Yes. I love that. And we are so blessed to be here at this time, in this great time of change.
Yeah, exactly. We can feel it. And to be part of those, you know, those change makers that are out there. And you're clearly one of them. So, I can't wait to read this book. Where can people find out more about this book? And you've set it up for anyone, for anybody that might still be wondering, like, what is the remedy you're talking about? What is kind of your selling point? Like, this is needed for you.
Mm-hmm. First of all, the book has its own site now, ritualasremedy.com, which then connects to my Mara Branscombe site. So just go Ritual as Remedy, and it gives a lot of background and it gives a lot of articles that I've written around ritual as well. And the remedy is, to me, being able to guide oneself on a daily basis. Being able to guide oneself on a daily basis. That changes throughout our life. Our practices evolve and they need to evolve. And so what keeps you steady? What's true for you? What's evolving through you? And the book, the first part of each chapter is the prose, and the second part is actual rituals that you can follow step by step. And this is part, again, of me, you know, really handing this book off out into the world, is that make it your own. Make this book your own. There's all sorts of journal prompts in it as well. A lot of teachers have been sharing with me that they're using it also on their retreats and their practices, which is wonderful. So my intention is that people then go and, you know, figure out what works for them through this.
I love that. I love that. Because again, doing anything, a practice, a tradition, a habit, that makes you feel more embodied and more empowered is going to make you a better human, not only for yourself, but for all beings around you. And I think that's what we need now more than ever in many ways. We are in a very challenging and exciting, but also troubling time in our history. And we need to show up and not be bystanders. So thank you so much for giving us that gift and that power to empower ourselves.
Thank you.
I really appreciate talking to you, and I can't wait to read your book. Everyone, check out Ritual as Remedy. Mara has so many wonderful tips for these embodied practices for self-care. And as always, I'm pulling for you.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real, frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.